Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining Unfiltered on the Heritage Radio Network.com. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick, your co-host. Rockin' solo today as Brian is in Bordeaux for our 106th episode. And we have some great spirited guests in the studio today. Welcome to Jeff Jensen and Mike DeSimone.
Thanks, Aaron.
Hello. Thank you.
AKA the World Wine Guys.
It's great to be here today. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Well, this is, I think, a perfect day to talk about what we're here to talk about today, which is the release of your new cookbook called the Fire Island Cookbook. And as it's sweltering 75, 80 degrees outside, who wants to be at the beach?
We want to be at the beach.
Really. I want to be at the beach right now.
Really?
It's all good. It's nice to be here, but the beach, you know.
Yeah.
The beach is where it's at in this weather.
Sure, yeah. Well, we'll get into a little bit more about the cookbook, but I also wanted to sort of talk a little bit about your backgrounds as wine writers. World Wine Guys definitely gives that picture of the two dynamic duo traveling the globe to the world's most renowned wine regions and sort of getting in there. So tell me a little bit about what you guys do aside from writing cookbooks.
We are, we recently became the entertaining and lifestyle editors for Wine Enthusiast magazine.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so that's very exciting. And so we kind of combine it, you know, we don't write so much, you know, like tasting notes, like that dry thing that, that unless you have that glass of wine in front of you, it doesn't mean a lot to you. We talk about the restaurants that serve the wine, the the hotels that you can stay in if you're visiting a wine region. We talk about what to drink with what food, that kind of thing. So we really kind of take it. It's like a whole organic experience.
Sure.
It's not a science project. It's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more about the lifestyle of wine. You know, for us, we really like to in the words of Shirley Valentine, you know, I want to drink the wine in the land where the grape was grown.
Sure.
So
yep.
It really is all about being there and, you know, having the food that goes with the wine. If it grows together, it goes together.
Absolutely,
you know, all
yeah.
that. And, you know, one of the things that really brings wine home for people is the experiential part. You know, when you're having it with friends, when you're having it with family, what food did you have it with? You know, we always like to tell our friends, you know, our winemaker friends, you know, we don't give points. We don't give you a 92 or a 95. So we don't sell your wine that way. But we, you know, we promote your wine by making it romantic, by giving, you know, our reader an experience with that wine.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't I get the question that Mr. DeMarco had posed to me to ask you in the studio today.
Well, all the way from
all
Bordeaux.
The way from Bordeaux, which touches upon what you just spoke about, which is the rating system. And now that you've mentioned that you are contributors to Wine Enthusiast, his question is a 90-point score from Wine Enthusiast the same as a 90-point score from the Wine Spectator, which are the two, you know,
right,
Bibles
sure.
for a lot of wine enthusiasts in the country to gauge what they want to drink?
You know, I would say yes to that, and I think that, and I honestly think that a way to just look at that is if, you know, points are not always the same, but they're always within a point or two of each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you kind of look at this the way a wine was, you know, a good wine was scored by Wine Spectator, by Wine Enthusiast, by Wine Advocate.
Or by Decanter in England.
Yeah, or Stephen Tanzer. You know, what? If you look, they're usually wines are all, they're within a point or two off of each other.
Right.
So,
and, you know, most wine,
yes.
most wine tasters are trained, you know, with a pretty strict set of rules, you know. Wine Spectator has their training. Wine Enthusiast has their training. You know, Robert Parker, you know, trains his people. So, yeah, I would say if you look at a wine, you know, is that a 90-point wine? Is it an 89-point wine? Is it a 91-point wine? Depending on the publication, they're all within a point or two of each other. So I think, you know, in the world of wine, you know, when you have a great wine, you know, you have a great wine.
Speaks for itself. Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
And when you have a wine that's a great table wine,
mm-hmm.
that's great too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different point.
Sure. Well, I think I'm more on the side of your guys' style, which is sort of taking the wine into a context of your atmosphere and then right. what you're feeling like eating during that period, right. you know. And so,
who you're with.
And who you're with. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And as opposed to sort of getting geeky about scores, because at the end of the day, you and you're drinking something that you enjoy, it doesn't really matter how it was scored.
I think it's more important when you know, especially if you're, whether you're cooking at home or eating in a restaurant, to think about the, you know, the food that you're eating and the spices that are in it and you know, the kind of like what kind of umami and mouthfeel the food might have, and then try to find a wine that's going to complement that. And obviously, not to worry about the points at that moment
sure.
in time, but to, you know, if, and if you don't know, to ask advice of, you know, if your waiter or the sommelier or somebody there and say, hey, you know, I ordered this and Jeff ordered that and we want to buy a bottle and we're thinking about, you know, maybe this or this, and what do you think is going to right. work with both
right.
of those?
And you know what, Aaron and Brian over there in Bordeaux, I hope you're listening. You know, there's a big difference between a 90-point wine that costs $100 and an 88-point wine that's cost 12.
Sure.
You know, so as much as we all, you know, as wine geeks, you know, we love those 90s, 91, 95s, but the fact is it's when you're digging in your pocket, and when most people, most listeners or our readers are digging in their pocket for, you know, to buy a bottle of wine, is 88 points good enough for a $12 bottle? I think that's a great value.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, we always have to kind of remember that not everyone has the ability to buy $100 bottles.
Sure.
You know, yeah. We're journalists. Mm-hmm. We don't either.
Right, exactly. So, I'd say the majority of people.
I think,
yeah.
I think that the points mean a lot to collectors,
yes.
too, especially yeah. at the, you know, the expensive
and winemakers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And winemakers.
Yeah, the winemakers yeah. get very excited about their points, but people who are buying wine to put in their cellar and buying wine that, like, they may never drink
mm-hmm.
or may never drink at exactly the right moment, those are the people who really, like, look at the points and know the points.
Yeah, yeah. So bring it back to the cookbook, which was, again, released today, April 17th, published by Simon & Schuster.
Right.
Fire Island, what? Why?
For those who don't know, Fire Island is a small barrier island not that far from New York City. It's off the south shore of Long Island.
Mm-hmm. And we're in Brooklyn. We're a little bit closer, actually.
Totally,
right?
Yeah.
And, you know, to get there, it's a kind of a special trip. From the city, you take a train. From the train station, you have to take a taxi or a van to the ferry. And then you get over on the ferry. They're in the season. They're are no cars on the island.
Yeah.
There's a number of different communities, and as you know, there are restaurants there, but they mostly serve bar food.
Yeah.
So
I spent a few summers in Kismet.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah. Kismet's great.
Yeah.
So,
super mellow, and I think there was probably one restaurant
exactly.
on that island.
I think there is one in Kismet.
Yeah.
Right?
So you know,
I think
Ladon. Yeah. That the big deal is you eat dinner at home.
Sure.
And
yeah.
this became, you know, we do a share out there.
Great.
And, I mean, we're known in our circle of friends for our dinner parties.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, whenever winemakers are cruising through town, they always, it's, you know, winemakers are always like, well, if you invite friends over and cook dinner, I'll bring the wine,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. But
that's always a great deal.
We were in a house with six people and eight places at the table, and it actually started to get a little competitive for people who wanted to
get
be invited
seat.
Over
yeah.
and get a seat at the table. And it started as this kind of funny suggestion, and we are good home cooks. We're not professionals, but we're good home cooks. We have test cooked recipes for some. We test cooked for someone who wrote a number of the Williams Sonoma titles.
Okay,
yeah.
great.
For a while,
yeah.
And you know, we know how to write recipes, and it just really started the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and for us too, Fire Island is our point of reference because that's where we spend our summers. But the thing that's really great about this book is that it really, it's called the Fire Island Cookbook, but it could have easily have been called, you know, the Martha's Vineyard Cookbook or the Malibu Cookbook
sure.
or the Vancouver Cookbook.
Just the Summer Sharehouse Cookbook.
Summer Sharehouse Cookbook.
I noticed that when I picked it up because I was flipping through it and there was just a host of different recipes
which are
world inspired, and it's not that you're just looking at, okay, Long Island and a very sort of narrow view of everything that's sort of fish related. related that you would probably most tend to eat in the summer.
It's funny. There's actually a cookbook that was published in 71 called The Fire Island Cookbook. And a woman, a friend of a friend, who she actually scanned it and sent us the whole thing by email yesterday.
It was one of those cookbooks that has, you know, a bunch of different contributors, like, you know.
Actually, Craig Claiborne wrote a recipe for it, but it was all seafood.
All seafood. And the thing is, too, it was, you know, this is Mrs. Jones' recipe, Mrs. Smith's recipe. So it was kind of one of those church lady, you know, for lack of better words, you know, cookbooks. And it was really kind of fun to see that it was all, you know, seafood.
Sure.
But, you know, for us, Fire Island is our point of reference because that's where we go and that's where we spend, you know, our summer time with our friends and our summer family, our chosen family. And what makes, you know...
We're not gallivanting around the world.
But we're not on assignment, you know. And that always is a good thing, too. But it really is for, you know, dinner brings people around the table. It shares... You know, people can share a commonality. They can share, you know, a bottle of wine, a couple of bottles of wine, and enjoy food, break bread together.
Yeah.
So it really is about the spirit of conviviality and of, you know, communal sharing that happens around the table. And when do we have more time to do that? In the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 14 recipes in this book.
14 menus.
I'm sorry, 14 dinner party menus, about 75 recipes. And the 14 dinner party, you know, menus are kind of based on the summer season from Memorial Day to Labor Day. There's 14 weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of planned it that way.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But basically, any of these recipes can be cooked anywhere in the world, specifically in you know, North America during the summer months.
Mm-hmm. It's
because that's when the seasonal produce is right.
Yeah, you'll see. Actually, if you kind of look at it, you'll notice that, like, tomatoes don't come in
until a little
at least
later.
Until a little later. Although we talked to somebody recently from South Carolina who, you know, who was like, oh, we have good tomatoes already.
Yeah, for all the listeners.
Yeah, it's an unusual year. Yeah.
all the listeners like in Savannah or South Carolina, whatever. If you're you have tomatoes, there's a great bunch of tomato recipes.
Yeah, we barely get ours till like last week, July.
Sure, so. Yeah. Well, just to speak to what you were saying too about the sharing and conviviality and being in New York and how many people are from different parts of the world and ethnicities, and you gather around the table and you have these 14 different menus, which are, you know, totally spicy in one direction and American fresh in the other. And so it kind of has this interesting dinner party conversation surrounding the food as well, because it can speak to different people's backgrounds.
And
experiences. Oh, I had something like this when I was here, and then
we tell those funny little stories, you know, and there's like a story about, you know, like the history of, I mean, you know, like the, like where mangoes came from, that kind of thing, you know, like
avocados
from India to the islands, that kind of thing. But then there's others, you know, like the rainy day French menu. We discovered that particular beef bourguignon made with short ribs on a day that Jeff got five flats bicycling through the vineyards of Burgundy.
Oh, no way.
So it was just, you know, so we kind of, you know, we start that chapter off with, you know, into each life a little rain must fall, literally and figuratively. You know,
I'm looking for that chapter now to see what
it's one of the first.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. It's up front. Okay, it's
cool.
Up front.
Yeah.
So.
And the thing about, you know, the cookbook is that it really can be used anywhere and at any time. You know, and Al Roker, who wrote our foreword, and we love Al. He's a great guy and a great cook.
Has he been at the table?
Actually, we've had a couple meals with Al, and he's just a wonderful person. And he says, you know, whatever the reason, whatever the season, there's always a reason to turn to this cookbook. And that, I think I'm paraphrasing you, Al. I'm sorry. But that being said,
I think, you know, it's funny because what was really exciting for me, and this sounds really funny, is when the publisher sent over the index for us to look at. And as you look through it and you see, like, oh, there's a few beef dishes, there's a few seafood dishes, there's a few shrimp dishes, there's a few pork dishes, there's salads, there's, you know, so it really, there really is something for everyone in there, you know, and there's not, I mean, there's not one entire vegetarian dinner, but I think that if you were cooking dinner for friends who are vegetarians, which we've certainly
all
done.
You can mix and match.
Yeah. You can pull from a couple of different chapters and come up with something.
Absolutely.
Or if the pork lovers were coming over, you could do the same.
And the reason why we're here on Unfiltered today is because each of the menus, five or six different plates, they all have a wine pairing. So we've kind of gone through some of the trouble and you know, in our experience as wine writers, to pick the wines that go really well with the food that, you know, the recipes that we've created. And a lot of people, you know, like to pair food and wine, but they really don't know what they're doing or how to do it. And I'm not saying that we do it better than anybody else, but what I am saying is that we've tasted these recipes, we've developed these recipes, we've drank these wines with it, and we can tell you they work
pretty
well.
Yeah, we know what goes with the food that we cook.
Well, it's funny because I just, as you were talking about the pairings, came across the page, grilled asparagus and pancetta shallot vinaigrette, and living on the North Fork, asparagus right now is the only vegetable that's popping and on the stands. And it's also one of those vegetables that a lot of people have a hard time pairing for whatever particular reason. It's gotten a bad rep. But it's always been, you know, usually paired that I've seen it with a white wine that has good acidity. And looks like you guys have paired a Trebbiano, a Grichetto blend from Umbria. I mean, that's just like one of those things where you can help guide people along a little bit.
And it also works really well with, you know, Sauvignon Blanc.
Yes.
We were on Martha Stewart for Valentine's Day, and it was really kind of funny because we talked about aphrodisiac foods.
Okay.
So she said, you know, I know about caviar, I know about oysters, chocolate, but asparagus, you know, what's up with
why
this?
Why is that an aphrodisiac?
So
Jeff picked up an asparagus spear and waved it in Martha Stewart's face on national television and said, well, Martha, besides the obvious shape.
She
had to take a second and compose herself.
She did blush. She did say, guys, this is a very silly segment, but we did get invited
back.
Bring
it back.
But we did get invited back, so it's all good.
Excellent.
And but asparagus is one of those things that it does have a lot of, you know, a little bit of acidity, and it's got a really astringent, you know, pungent nature. So you have to find a wine that's really going to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the Grichetto Trebbiano works really nice.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's not over-oaked as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It has a wine that has, a good, some good aromatics to it.
It's got
to
still be crisp.
And just be crisp and have that, like, that slap of acidity to, you know, to cut through that funky flavor that the asparagus can have.
Yeah.
And we, of course, put pancetta, you know, on our asparagus.
As so. I would have as well, so, yes.
If it's pork, it's got to be good, as far as I'm concerned.
A little heritage pancetta.
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do love that. And, you know, so with the umami of the pork, the nice, you know, wonderful mouthfeel that you get from that, you know, these wines do really work well to cut through that and cleanse your palate for the next bite.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
how was
important.
The process of writing a cookbook? Did you guys come across, or how long did it take you? Did it come to be a more challenging experience than you had anticipated, or a bit of a breeze?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because there's a short answer and a long answer.
Okay.
But the
long answer.
The answer is really that, you know, we've been cooking these recipes for many, many years. So some of these recipes are from our family. I happen to be Hungarian-American, so there's a chapter called Height of the Empire.
I saw that one, you know, yeah.
Which has some Hungarian dishes that my mother and my grandmother taught me how to make. And Mike's Italian-American from not too far from here, from the Flatbush area.
Yeah, actually, my dad's from Bushwick.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, we're right off of Bushwick Avenue here in Brooklyn.
Excellent. So, welcome home.
Yeah. So we just had some great pizza at Roberta's. That was always a good thing, too.
Love that.
So I do feel very Italian-American here. But I think it's, you know, the long answer is we've been cooking these recipes for a lifetime. But the short answer is that, you know, once Simon & Schuster bought the cookbook, you know, they had a deadline, and we had to get the cookbook done in that deadline.
Right.
So that was a 6-month deadline. So
that's
pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you write a book, when you write a nonfiction book, you actually come up with a proposal and sample chapters. And what happened was actually our agent sent this book over to our editor, Emily, the woman who became our editor, Emily Bessler.
Mm-hmm.
If Emily's listening, hi, Emily, love you.
At Atria Books,
all the girls over
who now
Simon & Schuster.
This is actually one of the first books published under the Emily Bessler imprint. In fact, she has her own imprint there.
Under Simon & Schuster.
Excellent,
yeah.
Great.
So Emily took the recipes home. home. She actually was like, you know, I like these, but I'm not really sure. She took the recipes home and cooked from our recipes for 1 year.
She had a bunch of dog hair pages.
For her family and friends.
Oh, so she did a little bit of research. Hard work
for you. She walked into her office 1 year later and looked at her brand new assistant, who now is an editor in her own right, Kate Citrullo. And Emily,
hi, Kate.
And Emily said, call Peter Miller and find out if anyone bought that cookbook, because I've been cooking these recipes for 1 year. People need to know about this, and other people deserve to cook from this book. And
voila.
That's how it happened.
Well,
yeah.
It isn't always that easy, but congratulations on that.
And we had actually kind of, we were working on other projects, and we kind of just, we put it out of our mind. We weren't, you know, we weren't thinking like every, like, oh God, we've got to get that cookbook. It was a total surprise.
Cool.
But as writers, you know, and anybody who's listening out there that's a writer, when you have a deadline, that is when you have to have that project in. So, you know, that's exactly what we did.
You
we
just
got to
sit down and like you do your taxes. It's like just sit down and write it down and go to the
computer.
This
is much more fun than taxes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But it's still one of those things that you can like, oh, well, I'll write that recipe tomorrow and I'll do, you know, because you know it already.
Right, you know it.
You just got to sit down and do it.
And we would actually sit down with each other, and one of us, and there's things that I cook, there's things that Jeff cooks, and we don't always use recipes, so one of us would cook and all of a sudden it became, oh, I need to measure.
Right, exactly. I'm the same way.
I need to measure the teaspoon, and the funny thing is, like, we have a very exacting pesto recipe in there. Someone, a friend who doesn't know how to cook, asked us years ago, could you tell me how to make your pesto? And I was like, yeah, it's really easy, you know, you get a thing of basil about yay big and you rinse it, and then you get it, you know, Parmesan about that much, and you do this. So like a couple of weeks later she said, I made your pesto and it was awful.
Oh,
and I was like, really, what did you do? She said, well, I bought one of those green Kraft cans of Parmesan. You said get about that much Parmesan. And then I bought the big thing of dried pesto at Costco. And so she did not use a fresh chunk of Parmesan Reggiano. She did not use fresh basil.
Oh, no.
Well, for God's sake, and I wonder if it was awful.
I think she even used Wesson oil. And not
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, stop. It's getting worse and worse. Yeah.
That was... that. Hyperbole gets you everywhere. But,
well, we're going to take a short break and just be back to speak a little bit about another book that you have on the horizon for October, as well as your travels in Spain. Stay tuned.
Whole Foods Market is a proud sponsor of Transforming Cities, in partnership with BioCities and the Harvard University Graduate School of Design on May 2nd. Buy tickets and learn from multiple stakeholders on how food systems shape cities. Visit biocities.org for more information.
The vinyl shot like stereo. We move the train and carry over. On, on, on. One time, let's give it all a go. Push it on up and let it blow.
Welcome back to Unfiltered. This is your host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, and joining me in the studio today are the authors of the Fire Island Cookbook, Mike DeSimone and Jeff Jensen. Hi again.
Hey again.
We're glad to be back.
Happy to still be here.
Yes. Great music. That was
I think that was leading. A little nod to Balkan Beatbox. We wanted to do something
like
worldly to hone in on the ideas of this cookbook. I can imagine when you are putting together one of these menus, there has to be some music involved in the background that sort of speaks to what you're feeling too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Totally.
Like the rainy day French menu, you're going to play something then different than the Height of the Empire
Dimitri
menu.
From Paris,
Dimitri from Paris.
Yeah, some like really cool lounge music would work with that.
Little Grace Jones. You know?
Sure, yeah. So before the show, we were talking a little bit about another cookbook. I mean, sorry, another book that you are releasing in October, which is a little bit more educational driven as wine writers. So would you like to introduce that as well so we can keep our listeners on the lookout for that?
We're excited about the book. It's called Wines of the Southern Hemisphere, The Complete Guide. Our publisher is Sterling Epicure, which is a division of Barnes & Noble. So we're really excited. We're very honored to have two fantastic publishers, Simon & Schuster and Sterling Epicure.
Big year 2012 for you two.
Amazing year. Yeah. So we traveled for about 14 months. We traveled around the world. And
The Southern Hemisphere.
Around the Southern Hemisphere, actually. So it covers wine from Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, South Africa, New Zealand.
Oh, this is a whole other show.
This is a whole
other show. No, absolutely.
Well, we'd love to come back.
Cool.
Yeah.
Because I know that Uruguay and Brazil has at least getting a little bit more eyes on them, even though it's...
And they're making some great wines.
Okay,
they really are. Our book, you know, Brazil, for example, in our book, we just got the galleys over the past weekend, and there's 25 pages about wines from Brazil. I don't think anyone has ever devoted that many pages to Brazil.
Yeah, if you look at other major wine titles, it's usually like maximum 8% of, of total pages devoted to the entire Southern Hemisphere, and Brazil and Uruguay rarely get
they get a paragraph. So. Yeah.
And we're talking about, you know, books by our friends, you know, Oz Clark, you know, Jancis Robinson, Kevin Zralla, Hugh Johnson, all these great wine writers out there. 8% of the book is devoted to the Southern Hemisphere. Our book is 100%.
100%. It's almost 600 pages.
It's big.
There
it's
are recipes in there, too. We got recipes from winery restaurants, just again, to let people have an idea of what kind of food is served there and how to pair.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really a pretty... it's written in our style. We tend to, you know, try to be a little lighter, a little bit, you know...
More approachable for a wider audience. Uh-huh.
And the book is really written in three voices. We wrote it... You know, if your dad happens to love the Chilean wine he buys, you know, at the corner store for $10, this wine will speak to your dad because it gives you great value wines. But if your dad happens to be the kind of guy who drinks only iconic wines like Penfolds and fabulous wines from Australia, you know, and he buys $100 bottles, $200 bottles, it also speaks to him. But we also interviewed a lot of MWs. So, you know,
that's really, Master of Wine.
Master
for
of Wine, yeah.
Those who are listening.
So these are people who are really well versed in wine. You know,
and you know, we ask people like what, you know, what's up and coming, what do you see are the new areas in your country, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We started each chapter is a different country. We talk about the history, the geography. We break it into wine regions. And then we actually profiled in the larger countries about 100 wineries. And in Brazil and Uruguay, roughly 20 wineries of some of these standouts. And it's like, you know, the household name wineries, as well as some
of our really
some
good
off
finds.
The radar up and coming good finds as well.
I did a harvest down in Chile, actually. And on my way there, did a little route through Mendoza. And one thing that I had noticed through my travels in South America was when I'd stayed at people's homes who really liked wine, you know, they were holding back bottles of Malbec and, you know, of good producers and whatnot for many years. And I think one thing that Americans don't necessarily appreciate is how South American wines can age. And I was just curious to see if you guys had had the opportunity to taste some older wines down there.
Absolutely.
That had,
we did.
Yeah,
we did. And in fact, a lot of times when, you know, when we actually found that a lot of the older vintages were wonderful. And I mean, when I say older, I'm talking, you know, we would taste something from like, you know, like an 05 or
sure,
an 04 vintage,
yeah.
But that's
yeah.
something still that people can buy and drink now. And we would ask the winery for the label and they would kind of be like, oh, why? What about my, you know, my 2010? And
sure.
we would say, but we want we're just by including that, we're subtly letting people know that these wines do age well.
Right.
And we were really honored to be able to taste some wines from like, you know, 85 and 92.
That's awesome.
And the wines are great. You know, Michel Roland, you know, for all the wine geeks out there, wrote our foreword for that book. And, you know, Michel's a great guy, and he's really responsible for bringing, you know, Argentine wines, you know, kind of
into
the
world.
French
into,
hand
yeah,
a little
French,
bit. Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So he really is, I think he's an amazing wine consultant, and his stamp is really seen on some of these wines in the Southern Hemisphere. So, you know, we have a lot of... you know, we're very happy to know him, and we're very happy to know that, you know, he's put such a great influence on some really super wines.
Very cool. Well, we'll look out for that as well.
Yeah, we're excited about that. Thanks.
And one last question before we depart the show today. So where next? Where are you guys headed next?
We are going at the end of May. We're going to Bulgari in Italy for a few days.
Oh,
we're,
very
we're
cool.
We're going to Ornellaia, Sassicaia.
Yeah, we're the homes of the Super Tuscans. And then we do have a house on the Costa del Sol in the south of Spain. So we're heading there. We were going to spend more time there than we are. We just found out last week we won a literary award.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
The golden so pen. So we have to go, which is given by the Croatian government for a big article that we wrote last year on Croatia.
Oh,
the
wow.
next big wine place.
So we're
really
honored.
Going to Zagreb to to pick up that award.
Well, that sounds like a very deserving detour and one that you could probably... well, that one is welcomed for that, yeah. So, things keep getting better and better then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah.
We're just so happy. Things are great. And you know what? One of the things that's really important for us is that, you know, when we get together with family and friends, it's just to have some wine together, enjoy, sit back and chat like we're doing today.
Sure.
And it's really nice when you get to know people and you get to know a little bit about their experience. And, you know, you get to know people. I think we always, you know, said a political meeting should always start with a bottle of wine. And, you know, you kind of, it levels the playing field for people.
Probably would be better if more politicians followed that rule.
I think that over a meal and a bottle of wine, you can really be thankful for all the wonderful things and the wonderful people in your life and really count your blessings and be happy about the world.
Yeah. Well, please tell our listeners where they can find your cookbook, The Fire Island Cookbook, in stores, and what does it retail for?
The retail price on the book is $30, although I know you can buy it on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com for about $20 right now, between like 1990 and 2020.
It's a
great bargain.
Yeah.
And come on, visit us in Midtown, New York City. We're happy to sign it for you, you know. So
very cool.
Yeah. And then the other book will be available October 2nd.
Okay.
So we're looking forward to that as well.
Wherever books are sold.
Yeah, wherever books are sold.
Love that tagline. And we're going to close today. Once again, this is Mike DeSimone and Jeff Jensen, from the World Wine Guys, who've just released their cookbook, The Fire Island Cookbook. So check out their website, worldwineguys.com, and please join us for our next show. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And thank you to Joe and Jack in the studio for your production this afternoon. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.